Welcome back. I'm Andrew Stelzer. We've just heard a report about a growing tide of people across the country who are calling for changes to our tax system in an effort to even out the economic inequalities that plague the United States. But if we're going to change our tax policies, where do we look for examples of better systems? The most common comparison is Europe, and the popular narrative heard by most Americans is that Europeans pay really high taxes and they don't like it. But Stephen Hill, who's joining us now, has a different take on the European tax system. He's the author of a new book titled Europe's Promise: Why the European Way is the Best Hope in an Insecure Age. Welcome, Stephen.
It's my pleasure, Andrew.
Now, one concept central to your book is that the goals of the European economy or economies are different than that of the American economy. So as part of that, the goals of the European tax system are different than that of the U.S. tax system. So what are the differences?
Well, the differences are fairly profound. Unlike the stereotype, Europe is not a socialist place. This is firmly capitalist. They have more Fortune 500 companies in Europe than the United States and China combined, and they have more small businesses creating more jobs than we have here in the United States. So it's completely capitalist, but it's a form of capitalism of what I call social capitalism. Europe has figured out how do you take the ability of capitalism to create wealth and harness that ability to create a more broadly shared prosperity. And the way they create that more broadly shared prosperity is by taking the taxes that Europeans pay and they put it into things like healthcare, generous pensions, paid sick leave, paid parental leave, more vacations, university education that in many countries is still free. In some countries, they've introduced a small tuition, more senior care, more job training. You know, they help out people with housing if they need it. There's just many, many examples like this. I could go on at length about the many different ways in which Europe's social capitalism has created this workfare society because, you know, Americans, we tend to call this the welfare state. And of course, in the United States, welfare is not a very nice term. But in fact, it's not about welfare, i.e. people kicking back on the dole. It's about how do you put support around families and individuals to allow them to be more healthy and productive, increasingly important in this very economically insecure age. So that's really what the European way, the European system is about. When Europeans pay their taxes, that's basically what they're buying.
So you mentioned all the benefits that Europeans get from their taxes. But that's because they're paying a lot of taxes, isn't it?
On the one hand, that is true, but it's more complicated than what it's being made out to be because Americans, in order to get the things that Europeans receive in exchange for their taxes, are paying a lot more out of pocket, and I mean a lot more. In terms of childcare, for example, the average family of two children in the United States pays in excess of $12,000 a year in childcare. In Europe, you're paying $2,000, maybe $2,500 for childcare. Senior care. Americans are paying a lot more out of pocket for senior care. So in all these ways, Americans are, our taxes aren't as high, but we're paying a lot more for it anyway. So really, what difference does it make whether you're paying it in terms of taxes or out-of-pocket expenses? That's how Americans pay for it. And so really, when you start adding up the balance sheet about who's paying more for what you discover is that Americans are paying out just as much as Europeans, and in some cases, paying more than Europeans. We're just getting a lot less for our money.
Now, a counterpoint to what you say, which we hear often, is, well, Americans have choice. They can choose their health insurance provider. They can choose their senior care provider as opposed to having the government control it or dictate it. So how do you respond to people who say, we have that choice here, and in Europe, they don't have choice. The government is in control of all these services.
It's really not true. First of all, the idea that you have discretion over whether or not to buy health care, whether or not to go for a college education or job training. I mean, in today's competitive world, is it really discretionary to not have health care, to not have adequate training to be competitive in the employment market? Is it discretionary to not have adequate child care for your families? I would say not. In today's world, you need to have a certain amount of support in order to enjoy a good life. And that's what Americans are really grappling with because we don't have these sorts of supports and to the extent that Europeans have.
In your book, you say that there's a concept in Europe, and specifically you mention the German Constitution, that the ownership of property imposes duties on the owner, special duties to society, that property rights come with responsibilities. And the same might go for wealth and taxes, in that the rich have to pay more taxes because they have a responsibility to society. What can you say about that concept? Is that key to the reason that the taxes are higher on the rich? Is it a cultural construct that they seem to believe that there, and we don't necessarily hear in the States?
Well, in the United States, these kind of concepts have changed over time. But today in Europe, you hear the word solidarity is used a lot, that people, no matter what their tax bracket, feel like they need to be in solidarity with each other and help each other out. So there's more of this communal sensibility about it than you see here in the United States, where it's much more individual rights and this is my private property and get off my land and that kind of attitude. But it wasn't always that way in the United States. I mean, after the New Deal, Franklin Roosevelt, when he was president, there was more of a sense that people who had more should pay more. And we still have that to some degree, but you know, the United States has been going through about 40 years of conservatives bashing the role of government. Ronald Reagan, in his first inaugural address in the early 1980s, said government is the problem. And with that kind of ideological propaganda machine constantly going after government, it's convinced Americans that government can't do anything right.
You mentioned the difference between the concept of welfare and workfare. You said the European workfare system, one important distinction you mentioned in your book is that while welfare is only for lower classes, workfare provides benefits to people of all classes. Is the fact that maybe wealthy people or even middle class people in the United States don't seem to feel they see the benefits of taxes, part of the anti-tax sentiment? Do you think if people felt they got more for their taxes, they'd be more willing to pay higher taxes?
I definitely think that if people felt they were getting more for their taxes, they'd be willing to pay their taxes and realize that government can do good things. I think for a lot of Americans, it really wouldn't be a matter of paying more in taxes because you're paying the same amount in tax. It's just that Europeans are getting a lot more for it because they're taking that money and they're creating things like professional child care, better health care. They have paid parental leave. So when you have a child, you can stay home and, you know, some for 6 months, some for up to a year and a half, and take care of your child and still get 80% of your salary. So these are such of things that if Americans got more of them, I think they would realize there's a real benefit in having these sorts of forms of collectivized sharing of our resources. The other component to it is that we also in the United States have to really question how much money we're putting into the military. The military budget really hasn't changed much, even though our enemies have changed quite a bit over the last 15, 20 years. The Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. Who is the enemy today? Is it Iran? Well, Iran's GDP, its economy, is the size of New Jersey's. Is it Afghanistan? Their economy is the size of Rhode Island's. These are not enemies in any way, shape, or form like we used to think of the Soviet Union, and yet our military spending has barely noticed. I think that we actually could spend a lot less money, a lot more efficiently, and still be safe in the world, and then put more of that money into these things that other countries are starting to do, including the health care and the paid parental leave, paid sick leave, university education, more generous retirement pensions, support for families and individuals. That's what the challenge for America is, I believe, in the 21st century, is to figure out how to redirect our priorities, our guns versus butter priorities, in a way that maintains our security and even to some extent our power in the world, but that also realizes that we are powerful when we support families and individuals and have a strong, robust economy. And we don't have a strong, robust economy right now.
What about activist groups in the United States? We've heard about some of those earlier in the show. What role might grassroots organizing play in pushing for some changes to tax policy?
I think grassroots organizing could just bring some sense of sanity to the discussion. We could really help Americans to realize that in this 21st century, which we're still at the very beginning of, but we know it's going to be a very economically competitive century, and America is not going to be the dominant power like we were, that we have to be much more efficient at what we do. We have to be better at it, and we have to make sure our healthcare system is not so expensive, like it is 17% of GDP compared to France at 11% of GDP. And our healthcare system is rated 37th in the world, and theirs is rated number one. So I think that these are the sorts of things that grassroots groups can do, is to help educate Americans that, you know, we're really not the best. We're really not at the top of the heap. In many ways, we're falling behind our international competitors. And it's all because we're really stuck to the flypaper of old ideas. There are better ways of doing these things that Americans need to learn from other places, whether it's France or China or India or wherever. We should be much more flexible and not so fundamentalist and ideological in our approaches to these solutions.
We've been speaking with Stephen Hill, the author of Europe's Promise, Why the European Way is the Best Hope in an Insecure Age, published by the University of California Press. We will link to his website, which is europespromise.org, on our website, radioproject.org. Thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me, Stephen.
It's been my great pleasure, Andrew. Thank you.